You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts. As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Who Dat What Now, the history podcast that's not your history class, with me, your host, Katie Charlewood, history harlot and reader of books. Welcome, one and all, to old friends and new. I don't know why I said that. That was fucking weird. Before we get into anything, of course, if you are new here and you have an issue with colourful language or information presented to you in a less than pleasant fashion, then you might want to exit stage left. Good, now that we've got that under control. As you can tell, my voice is a little gone and I want to apologise if I'm nasally or a little bit husky, unless you like this voice. Yeah. My jazz voice. Yeah, no, I just got back from Disneyland Paris. I took my two kids and their big sister with me and we had a great time for the most part when my kids weren't whinging. They'd just never been anywhere before, so they didn't know what to expect, and so I think it was a lot for them. And I know that my kids were sick because, or they were at least getting to the point where they were under the weather. Because when I asked my girl if she wanted some macarons, yeah, I said it like that, or if she wanted chocolate covered strawberries on a stick. Kids love food on a stick. They do. She was just like, no, I'll have some juice, please. And I'm like, oh God, she wasn't eating cheese. My kid loves cheese. You give them cheese and ham and just like fruit. They love that stuff. You shove some fruit and some chocolate and shove it on a stick. Fucking A. But no, they were not going for it. It was strange. I mean, they did eat more cake than I've ever seen them eat in their lives. But yeah, it was weird for them. Now, I have one gripe with Disney though. Disneyland Paris. I don't know what the other Disneys are like. I haven't been to them. I'm not rich. I saved and got help to get to this one. And yeah, my little girl beat us in every single game. Every single thing that involved aiming. She's going to be a sharpshooter. I mean, it's ridiculous. Her hand-eye coordination is too good. But yeah, Disneyland Paris, it has a distinct lack of Clarabelle the cow. Now, I don't know if you know who Clarabelle the cow is, but she's like vintage Disney. So she's in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And currently you kind of see her in like Mickey Mouse's Clubhouse, Mickey and the Roadster Racers, and sometimes Minnie's Boutique. Now, Clarabelle, for some reason, kind of links up with Goofy, kind of because they're tall and lanky, I assume, because, you know, she's a cow. And he's a dog. And even though Goofy is a dog, he also has a dog. Because Pluto's a dog. I don't understand this situation. I feel like Disney needs to explain something to me regarding this one dog walking and this other dog being a dog. I'm sure there's a perfectly reasonable explanation for it, Disney. If someone wants to let me know what that is, that would be super. But yeah, absolutely massive lack of Clarabelle the cow. So I was picking up some Christmas decorations and I've got a vintage sort of Goofy And I thought I had Donald, but I didn't manage to get Donald. I do have Scrooge and Huey, Dewey and Louie, because the one with the lamp was like one of my favorite like VHS videos to watch growing up. I loved that so much. I would watch it and then rewind it and watch it again because that's the kind of intense, hyperfixating person I am. Yeah, no signs of neurodivergence there. Anywho, we were there and there's no Cly by the Cow and I am just severely disappointed. Like, my little girl, she has this denim jacket with like an embroidered Minnie Mouse in the back. And she's like, will you get one, Mummy? And I was like, I'll get one with Cly by the Cow on it. Like, that's my dream. To get like a denim jacket with a Cly by the Cow embroidered on it. Or I've seen people do these painted leather jackets. So I could get one for like my wee girl. I could get one for me. I get one for my son. If he wants a leather jacket, I'll get him a leather jacket. I don't care. But, you know, he'd probably get Kylo Ren painted on it because he just loves villains. He loves villains. I don't know what it is. He has the thing for them. And he connects with them on a spiritual level. But I would love, like, one of those leather jackets with, like, a painted Clarabelle the Cow on it. It'd be amazing. I'd love it so much. But, yeah, a distinct lack of Clarabelle the Cow in Disneyland Paris. Like, justice for Clarabelle, please. Excuse me, Disney. But I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, quit your jibber-jabber and fact me. In fact you, I will. But first, we're going to get our source on. Our sources are Murder and Mayhem in the Holy City by Pat Hendricks, Charleston's Past by Georgia Phillips, Sitting Up with the Dead, A Story Journey Through the American South by Pamela Petro, 6 Miles to Charleston, The True Story of John and Lavinia Fisher, and of course our favourites, History.com and Biography.com. Are you sitting comfortably? Good. Then let's begin. Now you all know I have been promising you the story of an alleged female serial killer, and seeing as it is December and the season of giving and whatnot, this seems like the perfect time to bring that up. And not because I had nothing else prepared. I have a Christmas special planned, but I am behind on collaborations and other such things. Oh, if you are listening to this on the day of release, you can hear me on the Shite Talk History podcast, and I'm also on News Talk on a podcast discussing the history of gossip, and I think I'm on last week's as well for News Talk discussing the history of Playboy. So I'm getting around, lads. That's absolutely flying. So yeah, go check those out. I'll put the links in the description down below for you. But anyway, back to the alleged female serial killer. And so our story goes to South Carolina. Because they made two of them. I don't know sometimes how state lines get drawn. They're weird. They cut through places they shouldn't. There's no, like, proper geological reason, socially or physically for them the majority of the time. It's just because it was easier because some fella had a ruler, right? Oh, who's he got? The cartographer. Shall he work this out to make this more, you know, regionally and socially acceptable? Like, so we don't harm cultures and mess up land divides that have existed for, I don't know, millennia? No. Benjamin here has a ruler and an HB pencil. We're absolutely flying, fellas. No worries. Anyway, this story is not about geographical lines. It is about travel, I guess, kind of, and death. Lots of death. And this may shock you, gentle listener, but a woman who may be wrongly accused. Yeah, I know. We're shocked that this has happened again in history. So let me take you back to the early 1800s in Charleston, South Carolina. I mean, I say Charleston, It's actually 6 miles outside Charleston, which is important. Because 6 miles out of Charleston, there is an inn of sorts. It is the 6 Mile Wayfarer's House. It is named the 6 Mile Wayfarer's House because, again, you're going to be very surprised at this information, it is 6 miles outside of Charleston, South Carolina. There is another sort of boarding house of sorts, a place for weary travelers to rest on their way to or from Charleston. The place where the dance is from. I don't even know if the dance is actually from Charleston or what happened there, but it's a good dance. I could learn any dance, I'd learn the Charleston if I had any physical capabilities whatsoever. I'm so uncoordinated, it is bordering on neglect. So we have this inn and another lodging house, another mile down the road, closer to Charleston, called the 5 Mile House. Very creative, I find, the naming of things in the past sometimes. Very creative. However, it is with the 6 Mile Wayfarer's House that our story begins. Now, this particular area of lodging was quite popular. It was a decent place to stop outside Charleston. Now, 6 miles isn't actually that long. I mean, if you're traveling and you're walking or you're going by horse, then yeah, it can be a bit of a trudge, in fairness, especially if you are a person who sells goods. Like, you know, if you are a trader of any kind, yeah, and you're carting things with you, but don't have, I don't know, a wagon, a buggy, a horse and cart, whatever. If it's just you and your damn mule, or perhaps a camel. You don't know. They could have had camels in South Carolina if they wanted them. That's not the point. So people would be travelling and they'd stop at this particular wayfarer's house because it's decent. And it has many charming qualities that men who travelled found attractive. The most endearing of these qualities, however, was one Mrs. Lavinia Fisher. And Lavinia, she is beautiful, she is charming, and she's, well, nefarious, some might say. Because here's the thing about the 6 Mile Wayfarer's House. People often checked in, but rarely checked out. Why did I say it like that? I don't know. That was very melodramatic. But yeah. So Lavinia, she would greet those weary travellers at the door, and she would bring them into her humble abode. She would be considerate and kind, and charm them, and get them to discuss things about themselves, to tell their stories, what they did, where they were going, who they were meeting, so on and so forth, almost as if she was casing them, you know, figuring them out for whatever reason. The reason, of course, would be murder and theft. I mean, the theft was the aim of the game, but murder was just kind of a natural progression of the situation. So after Lavinia lured these men in and forced them to divulge their secrets via her feminine wiles, she would then provide them with a delicious cup of tea containing a special ingredient. That ingredient, of course, was drugs. Yeah, she'd roofie them. She would give them a special hot beverage in which was poison or kind of some kind of sleeping herb. Something to knock them out, you know, just to get them incapacitated to the point that they could do what they wanted. And by they, I mean Lavinia and her husband, John. Now, in fairness, the poisoning was reserved for people who had anything worthwhile to take. Like, they wouldn't just knock them out willy-nilly. Like, that's just a waste of good drugs. So yes, once they knew that this fella had enough valuables on him that it was going to be worth pinching them. They drug him. He would get tired and he would retire to his bed in a very special guest room with a bed upon which no one was ever expected to have a full night's sleep, because this bed had a special lever. The bed was customized so that it would sort of become a trapdoor, and the person would lie upon it, fall through, and then land on spikes. Spikes. A basement of spikes. The bed was jimmy-rigged to just whoo and drop a sleeping person, or, I don't know, a poisoned person. It feels like this hasn't been well thought out. Like, it feels like a lot of hassle. Like, if you've already poisoned them, couldn't you just strangle them? A garrote, perhaps? It does feel like a lot of drama. Like, is this to show off to somebody? Look at this interesting sort of murder toy. Like, people would have trapdoors as a way of protection and, like, you know, to drop enemies to. But this? I don't want to say it's overkill. I mean, it is, obviously. But it just seems like a bit much. And I'm all for an extra gal. I am very much extra. I consistently tell people that I am, in fact, too much. And you just need to accept that. But yeah, this just seems a little far-fetched. I mean, are you really into hinges that much? Do you really need to show off your carpentry skills to this point? Look what I did, honey. I made a bed that turns into a trapdoor. Like, really? Really? That's... Anyway. So, yeah. They would fall onto the spikes, and then anyone who's managed to survive both being poisoned and stabbed, like fucking Rasputin, John would come in and just finish him off. Like, because apparently, you know, there isn't such a thing as overkill in this house. But yes, after the person was well and truly deceased, the fishers would just steal their shit and hoard it like dragons. Sometimes they would sell bits on, fence it off, but yeah, that was their whole deal. They were a husband and wife doing what they loved, creating intricate death traps and stealing shit. Living the dream. I'm kidding, that's horrible. But yeah, they're doing this stuff. And here's the thing about, you know, murdering people consistently over a period of time, is that when people go missing, others start to notice. So people start to investigate, and they're suspicious about how and where these people are going, and why so many of them, the last time they were seen, was in the vicinity of the 6 Mile Wayfarer's house. So people already have their hackles up. They're getting, you know, a wee bit weirded out by the situation, a wee bit suspicious. And then John Peoples. John is on his way to Charleston. He's travelling in from Georgia. You know, it's a long journey. I'm fairly certain. Geography, not my strong point. So he's travelling in and he's tired and wants to rest. And he comes across the 6 Mile Wayfarer's house. And he is welcomed in by the beautiful Lavinia. And so he goes in and Lavinia tells him that the room isn't quite ready yet. But you know, come in, put your feet up, make yourself at home, have this delicious cup of tea. Don't ask why it smells like almonds. And he goes, this doesn't seem weird at all. And they're asking him questions. Well, Lavinia's asking him questions. And he's like, not into this. He's like, That's a lot of questions you're asking me specifically. How much money did I bring with me? Why do you want to know how much money I brought with me? Like, so many questions. Like, I don't know if you've ever sat on a plane next to a 7-year-old. Like that. I imagine it's like that. Just so many questions, consistently, one after another, in a row. So she's asking him, you know, where are you coming from? Where are you going? How much have you got with you? Did you bring any valuables with you? And again, bit odd. And so he's looking at his tea and he's not feeling like he wants to consume this particularly, which is, you know, a good idea, obviously. And he's starting to get uncomfortable. So when Lavinia isn't looking, he just pours out his tea and pretends he's drinking it like, what a delicious, heated, slightly caffeinated beverage you have made for me, Lavinia, lovely proprietor of this establishment. And he hears people moving about. Right? He's kind of wigged out. He's thinking this is odd. And he's like, are there other guests in this guest house? And Lavinia and John are like, no. No one else is here. Don't be ridiculous. That's foolish. And he's convinced there's someone else there. He's like, there's too much noise happening for us to be alone. And like, why would you not want to see other people are guesting in your guest house? That's just bad business. And so Lavinia informs him that his room is in fact ready. And, you know, conveniently. And so he goes into the room, but he's really fucking suspicious over this whole scenario, because unlike most people who travelled there, he's not an idiot. And so he decides he doesn't want to sleep in the bed. He wants to be prepared in case anybody comes into the room. Because he's like, they said there's no one here, but there's definitely fucking people here. And so he sleeps in a chair by the door. So instead of being in the bed. So while he's having a little sit down, a little nap, he hears a creak. And in the middle of the night, he sees the bed fall through the floor, like right in front of him. And he sees it crash onto the spikes below. And he's like, fuck this for a game of soldiers. And he leaps out the window and fucking legs it. He is going full Forrest Gump, running through, I don't know, forest and roads and stuff. And he legs it to the authorities because he needs to get people there. He is not having it because that is fucking terrifying. So the authorities, they all sort of round up just as many people as they can, as many lawmen, and they head towards the house, 6 Mile House. And they go in there and they are met with an ungodly stench. Like, they can smell just decomposition, which somehow nobody could smell before this very moment. And when they go into the basement room, they find hundreds and hundreds of remains, just decomposing bodies, skeletal remains, the whole shebang. And so they arrest Lavinia and John. And John and Lavinia are taken to jail in Charleston. A priest is brought to them, perhaps a reverend, some kind of holy man. I'm assuming a priest because they mention confession. And he begs them to confess their sins and to go to the Lord with a light heart, right? And John is like, I'm sorry, we killed these people, you know, we shouldn't have done it, it's, you know, whatever. And Lavinia is like, nope. I will confess nothing. I will apologize for nothing. I will do nothing. And John is taken out on his day of execution. He's brought along. The noose is put around his neck. Short drop and a sudden stop. And Lavinia, she steps out and she's wearing a fucking wedding dress. And she is brought out to the gallows. And there she stands in front of a crowd. I mean, I told you she was extra, right? So there she is. in front of this crowd who have gathered to just watch her die. And she screams to this gaggle of onlookers, "If any of you have a message for the devil, tell me now, for I shall be seeing him shortly." And then, without missing a beat, she leaps off of the gallows and hangs herself before the hangman gets a chance. And that is the legend of Lavinia Fisher.
Hey y'all, spooky season is here. And if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley, not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston, and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
Throughout history, royals across the world were notorious for incest. They married their own relatives in order to consolidate power and keep their blood blue. But they were oblivious to the havoc all this inbreeding was having on the health of their offspring. From Egyptian pharaohs marrying their own sisters, to the Habsburgs' notoriously oversized lower jaws, I explore the most shocking incestuous relationships and tragically inbred individuals in royal history. And that's just episode one. On the History Tea Time podcast, I profile remarkable queens and LGBTQ plus royals, explore royal family trees, and delve into women's medical history and other fascinating topics. I'm Lindsay Holiday, and I'm spilling the tea on history. Join me every Tuesday for new episodes of the History Tea Time podcast, wherever fine podcasts are enjoyed.
But wouldn't you like to know the real story? Of course there's a real story. You really think we're like 20 minutes in? I think we're 20 minutes in. Let me double check. We are 25 minutes in. You really think this is where the story ends? Abso-fucking-lutely not. No. So, it's true that Lavinia Fisher had an inn, the Wayfarer's House, the Six Mile Wayfarer's House, with her husband John Fisher. Now, the Fishers weren't exactly squeaky clean, law-abiding citizens. They were part of a group of highwaymen, or at least they housed highwaymen, who would, you know, rob some people on this, you know, on the path, on the road, on the way to Charleston. And they would cheat at poker games in all of these inns in and around Charleston. Because the inns and the houses, they would host poker games because it brought people in. People would buy things, you know, food and other beverages and whatnot. So this was kind of a thing that was, you know, known but not known, like an open secret. And it was causing an issue because people didn't like to be cheated out of their money. So Five Mile House was known to host these sort of dodgy poker games, right? And Six Mile House, obviously, nice and close to it. So whispers start getting around about these highwaymen and the stuff they're doing. And so this fucking vigilante group forms because they're like, we are sick of this shit. And what they do is they go to Five Mile House and they burn it to the fucking ground. Like it's ash. So they burn it down And after they burn it down, they head over to the 6 mile wayfarer's house. And they get there and they tell everyone that they've got to go. And, you know, after witnessing 5 mile house, you know, turn to dust, incinerate in front of their eyes, they think, yeah, you know what? This is a perfectly reasonable thing. We will go. And so everybody, the fishers, their buddies, they just get up and go. They leave. And the vigilante group, they leave this one fella, David Ross, to guard the 6 mile wayfarer's house to stop the fishers from returning. Because, you know, there's a man and a woman and some other men. And you're like, yeah, this is going to stop this one dude. So yeah, they're trying to guard it with this one fella. Not even two, just one. Again, feels like poor planning in this whole scenario. But I guess if you've got a vigilante gang, organisation is probably not the top of your to-do list. But anyway. The very next day, David Ross, he's on guard, and some fellas come over and start beating the shit out of him. And he sees Lavinia Fisher come towards him and he's like, it's the beautiful, lovely Lavinia. She's clearly going to help me. No. He says that she chokes him, hits him, and smashes his head through a window. Now, how she managed to do that if two other men were beating him up, I don't know. It, again, seems a bit odd for me. It just doesn't add up. But yeah, he's being beaten up by three people and still manages to escape. And so he legs it. And so the 6 mile wayfarer's house is open for business. And the crooked highwayman and the fishers, they're able to return. Because, you know, they probably want their shit. You know, you kicked them out of their house. Doesn't feel like the worst scenario to me. Because this isn't like a lawful force. This is a bunch of random people that just kicked them out of their house. Without any real evidence. Because see, at the time as well, there's this farmer who complains that his cow was stolen. And that the cow was stolen by this like big gang who cheated at cards and robbed you in the road. So yeah. But Ross has gone back to town and he has told people of what is going on. He has contacted the sheriff and yeah, well, shit's about to go down. So in February 1819, the sheriff basically collects a bunch of dudes because he doesn't have a proper police force of any kind. And so he gets, again, just a bunch of people. Like, I mean, you could also call this a vigilante group. I mean, apart from the fact that it's been led by, you know, the sheriff. You know, these people have not had proper training. Although I doubt the sheriff had either, but still. So this big fucking posse, they surround the 6 mile wayfarer house. And they remove the fishers and four other people from inside. They then set fire to the 6 mile house. They just burn it. And so as they burn it, they somehow find a bunch of stuff that they claim has been stolen. And they also find part of a cow in an outhouse. If you don't know what an outhouse is, it's like an outside toilet. I know some places have outhouses which are just like a little washroom outside. But I think at this point in time, it would have been, you know, your loo, your toilet. But yeah, so they find the hide of the cow in the toilet. Like, I feel like it's good that they were like, waste not, want not. And, you know, dressed the animal before whatever they did with it. But like, why would you leave a cow hide in the toilet? Like, it feels, again, not like a logical option. Because if you've got the hide, at that point, it's probably been tanned in some way. It's probably been treated. So do not put it somewhere safe, like inside the house or in the secret basement they allegedly had. I mean, they would have had a basement because everybody had a basement. It was just logical. It was a good place to store things, you know? But they just left a bit of the cow in the outhouse. It just, I mean, I can't be the only one that thinks this is weird, right? You know? So yeah, they find a bit of this cow and the farmer's like, see, they stole my cow. And so John and Lavinia Fisher are taken to jail. So the police, you know, suspicious as fuck, start digging up around the property and they found a couple of bits and pieces, a couple of things, you know, taken from supposed guests. And they also found a couple of skeletons on the property. Now, it's the fact that they say skeletons, because in order for remains to become skeletal, like that's a lot of decomposition. It depends on how skeletal they mean. Is there any flesh on them? I feel like I'm asking too many questions regarding this. But yeah, it's like, how did this get to this point? Sorry, I just remembered part of the legend where they're like, oh, we found all of these secret tunnels and mazes underneath the house. It's like, why? Like, having a tunnel, I can maybe get, you know, especially if you're stealing shit, but like, why make a maze? Like, that makes no sense. Because a tunnel is for a getaway, for hiding. If you've got a maze, that actually makes it more difficult because you make things more complicated for yourself because you have to memorize a fucking maze. But anyway, John and Lavinia Fisher are taken to the Old City Jail in Charleston. So John, what he does is he basically throws the entire gang under the bus. So he starts naming names. Like, he's got names, he's got places, he's got dates. He starts talking about the gang, their criminal activities, you know, everything they did, in return for protecting Lavinia. He's like, just, you know, he's trying to like save her and protect her, and she's having none of it. She's like, nope, I'm staying with you. And this is an interesting part because it is so weird to see a man go, no, I must protect my wife, instead of, you know, trying to save himself, which he could have done. But yeah, the two of them are, you know, they don't want to be apart. And so they plead not guilty to, you know, this very complicated and elaborate murder that they were accused of. Because they were accused of having the trapdoor bed, which obviously they couldn't find once they burnt the house down. Oh, what did you do? Oh, we just destroyed all evidence. Now you've got to take our word for it. Right? And we've only got one lawmaker here? Yeah, just the sheriff. Okay. And so everyone else is just a bunch of random dudes. Just a bunch of random dudes. Well, that's fun. Yeah, so here's the thing. Nearly a full year passes between them being arrested and, you know, their proper conviction, right? So they're in the Old City Jail, and they're actually really lucky. I say really lucky because, you know, they're in jail, so that's not that lucky. But they're on this sort of second floor, so instead of being downstairs in the sort of icky bit of the jail, they're a little bit higher up. They're sort of, it's kind of cleaner, and John and Lavinia are allowed to be in the same room. Like, they stay in the same room together, which is nice, I guess, that they get to spend all this time together in this 4 foot by 6 foot space with a bucket in the corner to poo in. Yeah, it's romance, lads. Romance. Now, allegedly, Lavinia used, again, some of her womanly wiles to get some comforts to the room, some sheets, you know, things to be comfortable to sleep on, you know, just bits and pieces, just girly things, you know? Now, there are stories that she was shagging guards and stuff just to make things more comfortable, but I feel like If she was doing that well, she would have used her wiles to fucking escape. You know, just anyway. So there she is, and her and John, they're there for months. So it's like 7 months in, you know, they've been here since February, and they're getting a bit antsy, and they're at this point planning their escape. So in September, they decide that they are going to try and escape the South Carolina jail. They had been sort of chipping away at this window in order to make a space big enough that they could climb out. And they had been collecting their prison linens, weaving them together to form a rope so that they could then escape. And so they do this, or they try to. So John manages to make it out, but as he makes it to the ground, it snaps, and Lavinia is stuck in jail. She can't get out. Like, there is no way for her to get out of this situation. So when it becomes clear that John has escaped, like, there is a manhunt. People are out looking for him. He is public enemy number one, right? They're all looking for him, but John doesn't get far because he is planning to come back and get Lavinia out, because he's not going without her. He could have crossed state lines. He could have buggered off. He could have gone to Oregon. But, like, he didn't. He didn't. He wanted to come back for his wife. And so, very quickly, within 2 days, he is recaptured and brought back. And then the two are kept under, you know, much heavier guard. They, you know, because they're now a flight risk. So through all this, Lavinia is convinced that they are going to be released. Like, you know, these aren't real charges. Because, like, the two bodies, or the three bodies, or whatever, they found on the property, like, it's a big enough property. There is no guarantee that these were specifically connected to the Fishers. You know, they could have been connected to the gang. But when they go to trial, right, they are found guilty. The jury finds them guilty of highway robbery, which is a capital offence. You stole some stuff, so now we're going to hang you. I'm not saying the punishment doesn't fit the crime. No, that's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. The punishment does not fit the crime in this scenario. So Lavinia is convinced that they are going, you know, to be, like, overturned. Like, that this isn't going to happen because, you know, women generally don't really get hung. It's not really a thing. And the couple are trying to appeal, you know, this decision. They're trying to get it turned around. But in February 1820, a whole year after they were first arrested, their appeal is rejected and they are both sentenced to death, with their execution being scheduled for later that very month. And so they are brought Reverend Richard Furman, and he's brought in to give them counsel, to, you know, hear their last confession, if you will. And John is begging the priest to save his soul. He's gone full Christian. He's just like, you know, do what you can to save me, to save my wife, like, to save our souls, yada, yada, yada. But Lavinia, she's not talking to the priest. She is not interested because there's probably 500 fucking reasons why she doesn't want to bloody do it. You know, she's waiting to die for something she may or may not have been involved in. Like, I've seen this labelled as cruel in many documents. It's like, Lavinia was cruel, she didn't speak to the priest. Yeah, maybe Lavinia was fucking upset. Have you considered that? Maybe she was dealing with trauma because she was going face to face with her own mortality for a crime she may not have committed. But yes, the Fishers were taken from the Charleston jail on the 18th of February 1820, and they were brought to the gallows behind the building, and they are dressed in white. Because, remember, during this time period, White would be the funeral shroud. It's what would cover a body, you know, upon burial. So John Fisher, he is praying with the minister, and he is just leaning into, again, the whole God situation, and he gives the priest a letter to read out. And so the minister is reading this letter to the crowd of 2,000 people. So 2,000 people showed up to watch people die, because, you know, there was no shows on that day. And so he reads out the letter, and it basically says that John and Lavinia are innocent, and they ask for mercy for those who have done them wrong, you know, during this whole process, because trumped up charges, stuff's against them, and, you know, the usual shit. So after this, John begins to, like, beg the crowd. Like, he's asking them for forgiveness, and he's begging them to, like, you know, not kill him and stuff. But of course, this does nothing. And John is hung. He's hanged till dead. Now, Lavinia, that is a different story. So she completely freaks out. She doesn't want to go, obviously, because why would you want to walk to your death? I get it. No, absolutely not. No, thank you. 0 out of 10. Would not recommend. But yeah, she ends up being picked up and bloody carried to the gallows, because she is not going anywhere willingly. And she is fighting. She's flailing her arms and screaming, and she is just going absolutely, absolutely wild. And so she is being pulled up to the gallows, and she is shouting at just like the people of Charleston, especially people in those sort of higher classes. She blames all of them for creating this situation. She blames them for, you know, causing this. Because, like, up until this point, Lavinia was convinced that this was going to get overturned, that people would do the right thing, you know, that someone would save her. But she has just had to watch her husband die. Like, watch him be murdered in front of her. Like, that's her perspective. Like, that's what she's seen. And so she is just causing an absolute commotion, so that this isn't pleasant for anybody involved. And honestly, good for her. Like, yeah, that feels appropriate given, you know, the information we have at hand. And so she's blaming all these people for forcing this kind of conviction on her. And, like, it gets to the point where she's on the gallows and she's reaching out and her hands are out. And at this point, you know, she's going through all the fucking stages of grief, and she is begging the crowd to help her. Begging them. She's just seeing how she's innocent. And she is so desperate in her last moments that she just reaches out for help that is not coming. And they manage to get the noose around her neck. Now, this is where I think the leaping comes from, the leaping part of it. Because the way this information is given to us, there's no way to accurately tell whether she jumped or whether she slipped or whether she was pushed. Because this is going to be frustrating for the hangman. This is going to be awkward because she's all wiggly worm in it. And she's just clearly having a breakdown because she has watched her husband die and she's being faced with her own death. And so if she's struggling and they're trying to get the noose on her, she could have easily slipped. And that would have been just more horrific for them, you know? Because it's somehow sadder if someone dies accidentally especially when you're seeing her screaming and crying and sobbing and begging. But one way or the other, Lavinia Fisher dropped from those gallows at just 27 years old. So throughout this story, it's sort of implied, you kind of get the idea that she's older. But like, she was arrested at 26. Like, she was so young. But I know, like, oh, it was a different time. I don't give a fuck. There was flimsy evidence. It was circumstantial at best. And they just blamed her. Like, it was her fault. It was her womanly wiles. You know, she was involved in this gang. Like, was she? Really? Oh yeah, no, they hung out in her house and they fenced some stuff to her. That's a wee shame that. But they're like, oh, but she clearly built this mechanism and she did this and she poisoned them because she's evil. Like, no. And because the fact that she wasn't, you know, forthcoming to the priest, and because they couldn't handle her reaction to the gallows, this myth spreads. Because nobody wants to, like, accept accountability for this. They want to just tell a story and make her evil. But, like, no. Just no. I really wish, you know, just sometimes, that women in history don't get completely fucked over by men. Like, not just in their lives, you know, because obviously, but in the way that we tell their stories, that we talk about their lives, that we don't mash it into bullshit and destroy their reputations just because they live or act in a way that you are not completely happy with. Pale and stale males. You know what I'm fucking talking about. So yeah. Anyway, she says aggressively, if you liked my retelling of the tale of Lavinia Fisher, and hopefully giving her some of her, I don't know, fucking history back, then please rate and review 5 stars. I'm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, all the places, just everywhere. I'm everywhere. Just do that. You can follow me on the socials. Yes, I just said the socials. I am on, I almost said history.com and biography.com, but I am not there. I am on whatever Twitter is known as now. I don't know, squiggle and a dot. I'm on that. I'm on Facebook, basically. I'm on Instagram and TikTok. I'm everywhere. Come and say hi. It's fun. Also, yeah, recommendation time, I guess, is where we're at. And I'm going to recommend, oh, my heart is racing. Oh, I'm actually, like, I'm quite ill right now. This is not good. Anyway, oh, also, I have a tip jar on my PayPal. If you want to just, you know, donate money for me to buy books and read things, that would be great. I can get books on Kindle for, like, $1.50. And I don't have to buy physical books, which I want. But that's not the point. That would be great. So, yeah, do that, that would be nice. Also, recommendation time, because I can feel myself needing to lie down and relax. So yes, I'm going to recommend for watching the Home Alone movies, 1 and 2. Don't bother with 3. Just, no. No. Home Alone 1 and 2, it's a package deal. I'm sorry, you gotta. For listening, I'm going to recommend you listen to the Shite Talk History Podcast. Have fun. I'm on it. I'm great. Probably not as funny as the two professional comedians. But yeah, I'm on that. And if you want to, you should go check them out. And for reading, I am going to tell you to go read a book called Bold, Brilliant and Bad. It's basically about Irish women in history who've been mislabeled. And it's fucking awesome. You should go read it. And with that, the room is spinning and I'm going to bid you adieu. Okay? Adios. Au revoir. Au revoir. No. Auf Wiedersehen, my friends. Bye-bye.